The Know Your Gear Podcast.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to the Know Your Gear Podcast, episode 354. I hope everybody had a fantastic week. I have so much to talk about this week already from you guys sending in stuff. Super amazing comments, questions, subjects. I want to thank you for that because, like I always say, you guys are the show. It's what you want to talk about. It's like a guest. You know, I'm the Johnny Carson. You're the guest. Okay, I'm not Johnny Carson, but you get the idea. I'm interviewing you guys, talking about what you want to talk about. Jinx says, "Hey Phil, why do local music shops seem like they don't want customer feedback or recommendations to improve their business? I hate to see local shops go away, and they are invaluable when done well." You know, there's a double-edged sword there, right? I could easily say, oh, you know, they better listen to their customers or else. But the reality is sometimes the customer feedback could put you out of business. You know, so I'm going to give you both sides, Jinx, because it's important. Because I think you're right, but I also need to show you what, you know, why that could be a deadly thing. I have a friend. He was a DJ, a famous DJ, and he told me a story once about what he called van people, not the van people like you're thinking, like down by a river. He was saying that basically the radio stations would put these vans on the corner of like 5th and Main. We're giving away free t-shirts, and they give away free, you know, CDs and t-shirts. And one day, a couple of the CEOs, I guess, came into the radio station and said, "Hey, we want to go down to the van. We want to meet the people." And they went with the van guy and they handed out t-shirts and CDs. And when they came back, these CEOs, these ingenious executives were like, "Okay, we've talked to the people and they want more giveaways. So less DJs talking, less music, more giveaways." And they did giveaways and literally the ratings took a crap. And the takeaway was that people that go on the corner of May 5th and Main to get a free t-shirt, they want giveaways, but the rest of us just wanted more music and maybe some DJs telling you some funny stuff. So the irony is that you have to listen to your customers, but you also need to be aware when you're listening what you're listening to, where the advice is coming from, and what type of customer that advice is giving you. So it's a double-edged sword. But your question was more to why do local shops don't seem to take feedback? That's probably why. My guess is because you get probably 60% bad feedback. Like the information is, you know, they're not very versed in your profession. They're not, you know, you should always value customers, right? There's a saying, the customer's always right, but I guess the saying is incorrect, apparently, because it's not complete. The real saying, if you Google it, someone Google it and probably put it there. It says the real saying is like customers are always right in forms of taste and something, right? Like in other words, like you don't tell a customer they have bad tastes, but that doesn't mean you have to listen to everything a customer says and do what they say, because that's what it got morphed into. But the original saying was, you know, customers are always right in their tastes, you know, in what they want. So it's important. So if customers tell you they want, you know, black shirts, you should make black shirts. But if customers tell you they want blue shirts, maybe, you know, you should pay attention to that. But if customers tell you how you should basically sourcing materials and stuff, or, you know, working in the back end, maybe that advice isn't going to be always great. So I guess that's the point, is that they're going to filter whatever you tell them against, you know, all those things I just said. It is important that they take advice, though. I mean, it's important that everybody takes advice. You have to kind of switch hats and be a listener. Here's what I'm going to tell you on the other end. I think it's important that every business listens to the customer. Not listens in the passive listen like I didn't talk while you were talking. No, listen. Listen to what they're saying, even if it sounds like you've heard it before, even if it sounds like it's not going to help you, even if it sounds like they don't know what they're talking about. Always listen to somebody that's willing to give you money or work with you, because that's an important, because there's more of them and they might all be thinking the same. So it's very important to listen. So yeah, they need to listen. Whether they take action, or that's up to them to figure out what's right for them. But yes, I think it sucks when they don't take feedback. They should take all your feedback wholeheartedly and then implement what they feel is best. And that should be the part that they, you know, like I said, filter it. By Grace I'm Saved says, hey, Phil, can you explain about not having the volume up all the way on a guitar? It sounds like it loses some of the tone when not all the way up. So this is something that's very common. Obviously, when I think famous, I always think Jeff Beck. Jeff Beck was very famous for rolling the volume just a little bit back. I keep my volume on the guitars most of the time a quarter turn back. Of course, when I say, you know, often, it depends on the pickup and the guitar I'm using. But I tend to like the bridge pickup just a little hot, not a high output pickup, just a little hotter than, you know, a low output pickup, and then roll it off a little bit off the volume knob, and then that way I feel like I can hit that sweet spot. It depends on your guitar, it depends on your ear, it depends on whether or not you have a treble bleed, whether or not that tone appeals to you, if that's going to sound right to you. So in your question, when you're saying it loses some tone, that could be the way your guitar is set up and you're not liking it, so maybe you need to try a different way. And it could be it's set up as best as it can be, and you just don't like the way that works and sounds. It's also your amplifier, you know? Like, I wouldn't tell somebody using a 5150 or a high-gain amplifier to roll your volume back a quarter turn. I don't know if that's something I would focus on. I'm talking about, like my Bad Cat, like Marshalls, like Voxes, where they're always, they're distorted, but they can clean up fast. I kind of just want them just backed off a little bit, and then I'll just give it a little bit more when I need it. Almost like a boost into the own, it's in and of itself on the guitar. So that's the kind of idea. But that's why I like treble bleeds. Some people don't like them. Some people like them. To me, it's a function. It's another tool in how, if it does what you want it, it functions the way you want it. And for me, it functions the way I want it. Okay, we're moving along. All right. I love this. It says, Michael Jamie Foxworthy says, Pleck, heard it's a waste of money and that a skilled tech can do the same. Okay. Buddy just got a brand new Les Paul Pleck from Gibson. Nicest guitar action I've ever played in 20 years. Thoughts on the Pleck. So the thing about the Pleck, I did a video on the Pleck where I had a Pleck, I had a Squire that I bought personally. I had a Sweetwater Pleck the guitar, and then I compared it to a custom shop, you know, mostly because it's, you know, for the dramatic effect, right? I want to be like, what is it going to, you know, how's it going to be? You know, you got to get people's attention and talk about it. But the ultimately, what I really wanted to convey, and I think I did in that, and of course, I did a follow-up video, how did I like it 6 months later? I'll say this, said it then, said it in other podcasts, I'll keep saying it. A Pleck machine is a technology that can do what a person does. I don't personally think a Pleck machine is better than a good tech, a guitar tech. I don't think it's definitely not faster. but here's what it is. It's very consistent. Like all machines, it doesn't have a bad day. You know, the odds are that if you know, but the technician could have a bad day, and there's a lot of stuff that has to be done besides what the machine is doing. But ultimately it's about consistency. That's what a Pleck machine is. It's not so much about safety. Like when you think of CNC machines, they're about precision, getting the same thing over and over again, but also safety because people, you know, you get hurt on the job and you want to reduce that. However, there is something about a Pleck machine that is technically safety. I like my two fingers. Technically, air quotes, safety. It is, because here's the thing. There are professions that are known to get certain injuries, okay? You know, I have a friend who's a dentist, and he said that dentists typically can get bad backs because they're in a weird position, bent over, working on your teeth all the time. And hygienists, too. You know, I'm just talking because of a type of thing that happens to that type of field. Guitar techs can get all kinds of, you know, injuries from doing the same thing over and over again, just like factory workers, just like plumbers, just like electricians, right? You know, to people who do things, hell, office workers, right? They can get carpal tunnel and stuff and tendonitis. So it one thing about a Pleck machine is it is doing the mundane part of the tech work so that you're not doing that over and over again and not dealing with a problem in your 50s or 60s. So that's one of the things that's nice. And that's essentially what you want to look at the Pleck machine as. It's not a guarantee, but it's going to do a good job, more likely to do a good job consistently than a good tech. It will save some people from some future pains and sufferings that they might have from their job, because that instead of doing those things, they can do other things that maybe are not as tedious and have to do so much all the time. And that's about it. But to say, like, I've never said, and I'll never say, oh, a Plek is better than a technician. Like I said, a Plek machine is better than a crappy tech. But, you know, I mean, that's not really a standard you want to hold to. But it is as good as a good tech. And I think even somebody asked me one day, like, who do you think would do a better setup? You are a Plek machine. And I'm like, well, I think the bigger question is if you made me do 100 setups, you know, and you made the Plek machine do 100 setup crown levels, you know, and then you looked at all 100 guitars, I would definitely bet that the Plek machine beat me in overall consistency. Right, it put out a better amount of consistent work, and that also. And I'm also taking out the anomaly that, of course, if I knew, you know, you're gonna check all 100 against the Plek machine, would I up my game? Sure, but I'm talking about legitimately, you know, just as a human being, a human, and not acting like an egotistical jackass. You know, somebody who's like, look, if you didn't tell me you were gonna do it, and you took my last 100 guitars that I did setups and worked on the frets, and then you compared to a Plek machine, I would expect that the Plek machine would give you better consistency than I could. That's because that's what machines can do. So there you go. That's what it does. So that's why it's good. So that's all you have. And that also explains when somebody goes, well, I got a guitar and it's Plek, and I don't think it's great. Yeah, well, that happens too, right? I went to a restaurant and I had a good steak, and I went there one other time and I had a bad steak. You know, that happens. It's the variance of those things that can... So, until they get a Plek machine that cooks steaks, I guess. All right. I love this name, by the way. Dokken Mokken. That's hilarious. I don't know why I love it, but Dokken Mokken, I love your sign-on. Says, Phil, we spoke about Epiphone reaching at Fender player price range. How about the new Epiphone Reach Fender American Performer and Average latest releases? Okay, so let's take a look at that. This is an early question, so let's cue this up. We'll talk about this. This was a hot topic for the week, the last week. I think everybody thought I was going to talk about it last week. Saw a lot of video titles, a lot of videos talking about the prices of Epiphones. In fact, I saw a lot of channels, smaller channels that I'd never seen before. And so I actually subscribed to a bunch of smaller channels because they were talking about the stuff. And they just came in my feed, obviously, from this. So if you don't know what we're talking about the Epiphone Ageddon. Ageddon. That's my fact that is me. Okay, so what is that? It's the, holy crap, look what they're asking for Epiphones now. $16.99. Yeah, $12.99 for the Dave Grohl made in China. What? It's $12.99 for this Epiphone Firebird. This is crazy. $1,000. $12.99 for a Kirk Hammett Purple V. This is insane. It's not insane for me. Here's why. Because I talked about this years ago. I said this was exactly what I saw the industry focusing on from the interviews of the industry itself. I can't even say if you watched all my interview videos, you would come to the same conclusions as me, because one thing that sucks about doing interviews, and I don't care what anybody says, because this is absolutely accurate to everybody I've ever met and talked to, is there is before and after conversations on those interviews that are never in the interviews, that are always a little bit, well, let's just say that's the part you probably wanted to hear. And that's just the downfall. If you want to interview people, you know, they're going to tell you, they're going to say things off the record, and you can't say anything, but you happen to be aware of these things. And I do my best to put as many things on the record as possible. When I say do my best, I mean, you know, advocate for that. You know, case in point, just recently when I did the Kiesel walkthrough, the factory tour, that factory tour is one continuous shot with no edits. Nothing was taken out of the entire tour. However, the reason I got that tour is because I did all my tours, all my interviews are the same way done. They have the option to have me remove things that they want removed. And I do that because I know they'll be more candid, and I know that they cannot, which is stupid for me to say out loud because some of them are watching and they'll know for future interviews. I know they'll never pick all the things, you know. So if I say, you know, instead of them telling me, you know, they'll only let me film this, or they're only going to talk about this, I say, let's just film, talk about everything. I won't release anything unless you approve it. We'll be fine. And what I learned is, even though they always have me remove stuff or cut stuff out or, you know, you know, want something, you know, pushed out, they never get all the things. So I always feel like I got you guys more than what I would have got if I would have went in first edited. What's great about the Kiesel thing is Jeff in the middle of the tour said, you know, if you just want to put this out, just put it out. I don't know why he said that, but you can see him say it in the video. He just says, when are you going to put this out? And I said, I don't know, whenever you say. And then he's like, you know what, just put it out. And so I put it out as a one continuous shot because I never been allowed to do that before. No one's ever let me have the whole thing. There's always something that they want removed or something that they want to look at to see if they see it in the background. However, in that case, we did not go into a certain area of his factory, which was pickups. And he said that in the video, he says, I don't want to film that because I don't want the recipes on the wall to be, you know, photoed. This goes back to what I'm saying about these insane prices for these import guitars. The whole mission of the industry is to get us to pay what you're paying now, whatever you think premium priced guitars are. Here's why I say this. And I know I'm kind of getting sidetracked, but I need you to focus on what I'm about to tell you. Every company, when I say every, 9 out of 10, okay, every major company cannot help but tell me or somebody in the background about Apple. How much Apple gets to charge for a phone and a computer, and how people will pay $2,000 for a China-made Epiphone, or Apple, sorry, Freudian slip. Anyways, they will pay $40 for an Apple dongle, right? They will pay even though that stuff is marked up to no end. And whether you like Apple or don't like Apple, which is I'm in the both camps, I buy Apple and I hate it, but I buy it. Because for me and my family, it functions for what I need and my circumstances. But my point is that they covet it. They covet the fact that Apple can make so much money with basically cheap labor. And they covet it to the point where you can see, no matter what they say, that what they do always seems to go towards that. How can they get $1,500 for a made in China, you know, iPad, right? They want that. And every movement goes towards that. The only difference is they have a weapon that no one's really ever had before, which is what I say all the time, which is Gibson. And I'm picking on Gibson Epiphone just because Epiphone brought this up. You know, I don't want to isolate them. Don't go on a whole Gibson Epiphone tirade in the comments. This is every company I've said. And the only exceptions to these companies are the ones I've told you before. The ones that don't double dip. The ones that don't do both. Okay. So if you want to leave some companies out of this, you know, I'll say right now, it's going to be Sir. It's going to be Tom Anderson. It's going to be Kiesel. Rickenbacker. It's going to be companies that are USA built only, or more importantly, for those people who are like, don't want me to be pro USA all the time, even though I can't help it because I am. It is one factory controlled by them all the time, you know, their factory. The point is that Gibson can entice you to buy Epiphone. Fender can entice you to buy Squire. PRS can entice you to buy PRS SE because they control the thing you want, which is the unobtainium, the expensive guitar, and then they can flow you down into the guitar they really want you to buy. And this is one of those things where this comes up all the time and I keep saying it, and then we keep coming back to here as a community on the show, like, hey, did you see what they're doing now? Squires are blah blah blah, look at the prices. And I'm like, yes, and I appreciate the questions and the subjects because it's an interesting discussion. However, it's exactly back to the first discussions we had years ago where I said, of course, right? Of course they want you to pay $1,500. And you don't have to be educated in the industry. You don't have to be a guitar builder. You don't have to be, you don't have to know anything to know that you can go on the internet right now. And as much as I love, look, I am a massive, Foo Fighters is one of the best bands I've ever seen live. Dave Grohl is probably one of the coolest guys on the planet when it comes to, I mean, I watch almost every interview with him. I just like the guy. Okay. But it's not hard to figure out. Look, I understand he's Dave Grohl and he's no different than Kirk Hammett and all these other guys. He gets a commander price because of his name. And the guitar is amazing. Okay. I mean, I'm in love with this guitar. But $1,299, it's not that I don't think it's worth that. I never talk in that language, worth. What I will tell you as a value proposition, I can find you a guitar, this exact specification with this exact paint job, made in that same country, China, in a very like factory for half. And half is because I just want to be lazy and I just want to win the argument. I could probably do it for find that same guitar for $300. Okay, but realistically, I can find it for $650, no problem, not even trying. And I hate picking on that one, but I'm not saying it's not worth $1,299. Look, I'm a huge Dave Grohl fan. I'm an Epiphone fan. I'm a Gibson fan. I could be just as susceptible as you guys to buying a guitar. However, we know what they want. They want the import guitars to win because that's where the money is. You know, I have heard so many manufacturers tell me, the owners of these companies, the CEOs tell me, if they were smart, they would just do the imports. And I think I said this, and if I haven't, I maybe should have said it. You know, one of the things that happened the first time I ever met Jeff Kiesel, the first time I ever really met him, you know, I met him for a brief second at the NAMM show, but believe it or not, the first time I ever met Jeff Kiesel was when I went to his factory to do my signature guitar. Okay. Cause I didn't deal with Jeff, as I've said many times, I deal with Brandon, who's awesome at Kiesel. And so obviously, and in all reference, I had met Jeff like just moments before we did the factory tour. Okay. So that all being said, in the first one or two questions, few minutes, he said, what do you think about us doing an import line, a Kiesel import guitar? And I said, I think that's a horrible idea. And he goes, cool. Why? Because he goes, that's the opposite of what everybody else tells me. It's weird that he asked me. I don't know why he asked me. I think he was just curious because he always, you know, he says, everyone always tells me Kiesel should do an import line. And I said, well, let me just tell you this way. I'm sure you asked me if I think you should do an import line. I said, no, you didn't ask me if it's smart to do one. Oh yeah, you'd make a crap ton of money. If you made a Delos or if you made a Kiesel guitar for $799 in Indonesia, you'd kill. However, I said, I'm going to tell you as someone who's interviewed all you guys and been to your factories and been to your facilities of all these builders. As soon as you go import, you're going to make so much money from that, you're not going to want to do this. And that's going to suck. And that's why I said you shouldn't do it, because I don't want you to do it. And it's already filled. There's so many already great guitars out there. There are a plethora of guitars that are amazing that I could buy and everybody else could buy. Let them buy those. But a unique custom guitar still made in the USA, it's a rarity now. And for those that want it, you want it. And so that's back to that Epiphone thing. That's why... So the fact that everybody's shocked that the Epiphone is now in the price point of USA Fenders almost, I'm not shocked about any of that stuff. I'm not shocked. In fact, the day they tell me a Squire is $1,500, I won't be shocked then. The day they tell me a Paul Reed Smith SE is $2,000, not even going to be remotely shocked, as I think that's been the agenda for a decade. And if anything, I bet you if you could honestly get a lot of those people that are in control of the marketing people, the sales people, the ownership of a lot of companies, they tell you they're behind schedule. This is where they want to be. And then you could pay $10,000 for a guitar that they'll build you in 2 years if you want a USA guitar. If you want to hold on to that old dream of holding those high-end USA guitars, if that's something that's in your head, that needs to be a $10,000 2-year dream for you. So there's my tirade. All right. But on a side note, I absolutely in love with those new Epiphones. But it's also why I told everybody when D'Angelico was blowing out that same color blue, man, buy those up, because those made in Indonesian guitars were fantastic. And that's why I got mine right there. But I didn't get the blue, the Pelham blue. I should have. But also, you know, I'm happy with what I picked. Okay. How are we doing on time? We're doing great on time. Okay. Okay, this was a great question. This came in. I'm switching over gears here, if you don't mind, to the Know Your Gear podcast YouTube channel, the Know Your Gear podcast website, where you can submit through the Ask page to ask questions and send topics. This one I got a couple of them, and of course, if you send me a question and I see two or three of them from people, I'm going to be like, okay, this is worth paying attention to. So, okay, here is. This is the question. Did you see, I'm paraphrasing some of it because it got confusing in the way they worded it. They want to know if I saw that Marshall amps, obviously there was an article out about Marshall amplifiers, but also some reports and stuff saying that the Marshall amplifiers, the actual guitar amplifiers, were only 5% of their total gross sales in 2023. And the numbers kind of break down very loosely. So again, from this report. So the report was basically saying that the company that now owns Marshall, if you're not familiar, Marshall was sold. The Marshall family still retains, I believe, 25% of Marshall. The company that bought Marshall is the company that was licensing their Bluetooth amplifiers, Bluetooth speakers, and headphones. Now they are the owners of Marshall. And I think I heard some kind of crazy number, like to the tune of $350 million is what they're either worth or are doing in sales. But the point is, they put out this information, maybe to their investors, but also it went public, to basically state that of all the money that came in 2023, it worked something like this. 25% was the headphones, 5% was Marshall amplifiers. That means the tube amplifiers. That means the digital solid state amplifiers. And then the rest was Bluetooth speakers for the most part. And they wanted everybody to know that they don't plan to stop making guitar amplifiers, even though it's 5%. Now, granted, you were talking about a very big pie now, okay? $350 million. So 5% sounds like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. But 5% still means that Marshall's still selling more amplifiers than, geez, 70% of the guitar amplifier companies on the planet Earth. I mean, they're still in the top tiers of building amplifiers. But it brings up an interesting question. And the question was, what does that mean when they say that? One of the things they said in this article that I read was that they believe the Marshall amplifiers, they convey the attitude of the company. In other words, it's a lifestyle brand now. And as long as people still want to be rock stars, they're still going to make guitar amplifiers because people are apparently buying Bluetooth speakers because they want their Bluetooth speaker at home to look like, a rock star's amp. So I understand. There's another interesting thing about it is what really brought up was a secondary question that I thought was interesting, which is, I know Marshall repackaged their studio line to come out with the JTM45. When I say repackaged, I mean they had another on that series. So they are starting to come out with a couple amps. The studio series now has the 800. They essentially have the Silver Jubilee. They have a Plexi, and then they have the JTM, right? I don't know if it's 45, it's JTM20, right? Whatever they're calling it. And so they are producing some product, but really, I don't want to pick on Marshall because if you think about it, Fender hasn't really if you think about the last few years, Fender's come out with a guitar almost every month. And you're like, of course they have, but then go, how many amplifiers have they come out with? I mean, they've added to the 68 reissue series a little, like one or two amps. They came out with the Tone Master series, but the Tone Master series was really pushed in 2019. So that's almost 5 years ago. And of course they did expand one of the models on that. But when it comes to amplifiers, I can't even say that I'm seeing Fender pumping out 2-3 models a year. I mean, that's kind of, I feel like you'd have to round up to say that. Not even one good new model or series a year of guitar amplifiers. Mesa Boogie's been pumping out a good amount of stuff. Obviously, Gibson just released their new series of guitar amplifiers that are made by Mesa Boogie, but still, it's still pushing out something. So there's something there. What you're really noticing is what we keep seeing. We talked about the fact that 2 Rock amps bought divided by 13. So we're seeing, amplifiers. We know Saldana was sold to boutique distribution. And that helped keep Saldana alive by another company buying them. A lot of people keep talking about the death of guitar amplifiers, but there's more to the death of guitar amplifiers than just saying, okay, it's going to die. It's going to be interesting, especially when Marshall says that their plan for future is to really push the digital amp market and grow that market. And that basically means affordable. Another thing I was going to point out was look at Paul Reed Smith amps. Paul Reed Smith amps, are still coming out with amps, but definitely think about, they used to make the high-end Archon $2,000 amp. Now they're making a $1,000 one, which is, don't get me wrong, it's really good. It's almost as good as, in my opinion, almost as good as the $2,000 one for half the price. But still, it's just like the MT-15, just like, a lot of things are doing, the Sonzera, it's about making more price affordable product. And, that is a different market than making iconic amplifiers like Marshall did, iconic amplifiers like Fender makes, iconic amplifiers like the, you know, some of these higher end brands make that, that really kind of make draw the, you know, get us all, you know, excited. This is so crazy. This is going to be amazing. So it's been an interesting article, but more importantly, interesting thing to hear that to the amplifiers are such a small market, and it just keeps getting smaller and smaller. Now, that's good news, though. And here's what's funny about this. I had this conversation with actually two friends this week who are amplifier boutique, not the brand boutique, but high-end amp owners, builders. And, you know, we were discussing it just freely in a chat. And one of the things we talked about was how, you know, they would be glad to get those customers. So it helps them because, you know, one of the things they have to fight is they have to fight that Marshall money. So many people have been buying Plexi amps, you know, $3,000 hand-wired Plexis. I think with Marshall not coming out with anything new and really exciting in the high-end market, and that's really what we're talking about, the high-end market, instead of just making things more affordable. I think, same with Fender, I think it's opening up the boutique realm. So I think we'll see a resurgence of the boutique area of tube amps. I think you're going to see a bunch of smaller builders kind of pop, you know, that and get on your radar because it's getting tough. You know, when you finally want to buy that first high-end tube amp, it's not a lot. The list is pretty short, guys. And maybe that's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing. Me personally, as someone who loves tube amplifiers and loves guitars and loves all this stuff, I don't want to see any of this stuff go away. So there you go. Okay. Let's see. Hold on, I'm just reading some of your comments. We're calling. Sunbay says, when will Marshalls make the wall of amp wallpaper? They already do. You can Google that, man. They make wall of amp wallpaper. It exists. I don't know if Marshall's doing it, but you can buy a wall of amp Marshall wallpaper if you Google it. You know. So, yeah, you can do that. No problem. That's what you want. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. All right, let's look at the comments. Some of the comments are funny. Okay, let's go to the next subject. Where are we at? Let's see. I know we've got some super chats, but also, hold on. There was this one right here. Here it is. Okay, so here was a question that came in, again, off the podcast website, the Know Your Gear podcast website. It says, Phil, is it safe to say if you see the same brands over and over on a channel, so assuming it means YouTube channel, that is their biggest sponsor, question mark. I notice this with Guitar World. They do article after article on Fender brands, Gibson, Boss, Line 6, and so on. They seem to go out of their way to not talk about small brands. It's a very interesting question. I noticed the same thing. So let me pick on guitar magazines first, and then I'll pick on myself. I'll pick on the YouTuber, which is me, is probably the easiest thing to pick up. I noticed the same thing on guitarworld.com and stuff, that there'll be something I think interesting that week that happens maybe in the industry, and I go to look to see if they have an article or information about this. And instead what I see is, you'll never believe that Fenders are on sale now. And I'm like, that's a weird thing. And then of course I see the links and they're really trying to push the affiliate links. And I take that as the fact that, you know, the print is dead, so to speak. And so Guitar World and those magazines that are living on the websites have to really push the affiliate links. The question I wonder is if they negotiate a much better deal than what I see for what YouTubers negotiate for affiliate links, because looking at what I would assume, because I know, look, Guitar World and all these guys, I'm not picking on them. I'm a huge fan, but you know, I mean, I'm aware of them. These websites that, you know, these guitar magazine websites, you know, they posted my videos many times. I've seen what traffic comes from when they post my videos, and it's not very good. It's not very impressive. I know when they put Jared Dines on there, or when they put, you know, some big YouTuber on there, you know, they're actually trying to draw off their the YouTubers' audience, not the other way around. They're not pushing audience to those YouTubers for the most part because they just don't have the draw. They don't have the numbers. So when I see it all the time, like I said, the first couple times Guitar World or any of those magazines, by the way, used any of my videos or any, or me, just like they use a lot of YouTuber stuff all the time to kind of print it. Of course, I was flattered. But I was also like excited thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get like 1,000 subscribers. I'm going to get 100,000 subscribers. Something's going to happen. And literally I would notice it bumps, if I was lucky, hundreds of views or hundreds of, and talking to other YouTube channels, much bigger than me, same size, smaller, same feedback. They were like, yeah, it's like, we see very little from it. Just be aware of that. So what I mean by that is when I see them always kind of trying to push you into like, hey, go to these, what are basically affiliate links, I'm like, well, they can't be drawing too much money off that because affiliate links pay very little and you really need the volume. And even a channel my size just doesn't have the volume to make an affiliate link worth it half the time. Every time I mention like, hey, I have an affiliate link, it's really just like a hope and a prayer that something might come from that's actually really interesting, you know, money-wise, but monetarily speaking, it's still not very, it's not huge numbers. So, and I see they focus on that a lot. You know, it'd be like if I did this live QA show and then 90% of the questions were like, oh, what do I think of the new Line 6 pedal? Well, there's a link to it right here. You know, it's like, you know, it's like not everything wants to be a push to an affiliate link. Like anybody, if I see an obvious opportunity, like somebody point blank asked me about a product and I can put a link there, I'll do it. But even with my numbers, even seeing it like, you know, a show where I get 60,000 views on YouTube for the podcast, I mean, I'd be lucky if, you know, 200 people, 300 people click that link. And out of that, if, you know, convert, you know, I mean, it's literally tens of dollars. If it's hundreds of dollars, it's rare. So it's what's interesting about that is I've observed the same thing. The Guitar Magazine websites really seem to focus on telling you about the new specials, deals, and product promotion more so than talk about gear. So I thought that was interesting. Or music. I remember Guitar World mostly talking about music. Now they mostly talk about gear like the rest of us, but they also tend to focus on just sending you to buy crap. So, you know, I picked on them. Let's pick on the YouTube channels. I'll pick on myself. I would say that that is obvious. I think when you see a channel constantly talking about the same brands, I think it's 100% safe to assume that is one of their biggest sponsors and they're working with them the most. I think that's very safe. The interesting thing about that is that it works exactly like this. Here's the math on my channel, ready? If I was to never post a video unless it was sponsored, sponsored meaning that they've either loaned me the guitar, they've given me a guitar, they've paid me some money as a co-sponsor or sponsor, or they gave me a discount, okay? So let's look at that. It's really simple to figure out what you would see on my channel. PRS, because PRS, I get along with the person in marketing at PRS, and they send me guitars to review all the time. And I've said this before, that deal is different every time, right? Sometimes I can keep it, sometimes I don't. Just depends on what's the deal. They don't pay me though. And that's because the relationship is so old, that's what it was. Now, that being said, Gibson, they've never sponsored a single video, and yet I have 6-7 videos of Gibsons, maybe 8. So, I mean, again, I pay for those guitars, I put them on the channel. If I didn't, you wouldn't see them on the channel. So the reason I'm telling you this is because on my channel, it gets a little weird because I tend to buy stuff or sometimes borrow stuff, but mostly buy stuff if I can't get it on the channel. You know, if I can't get a Schecter, I bought the Schecter. If I can't get I'm trying to think of a brand. If I can't get, a Kiesel, that's how I met Kiesel. I can't go to Kiesel, so I bought a Kiesel. Couldn't get a brand, I buy a brand and put it on the channel if you guys want about Fender, same thing. Fender doesn't sponsor. I buy Fenders, I put them on the channel. G&L Synth Guitar, there's a G&L right there. But, so you know, I bought a G&L and did another video too. But yes, if you see a huge amount. What I will tell you though, and I've said this before, when it comes to sponsors on YouTube and Instagram, no sponsor, dramatic pause, drinking water, no sponsors are as big as the, what I call the Amazon made in China based companies. No one pays as much as them. No one comes at you as aggressively as them. And there's just a never ending hole of them, to the point where You know, you can just, that's where the money's at. You know, if you want to make content where you get paid for it, it's going to be those brands, these brands you never heard of. And they're usually paying you really well. And I've said that before. And if they're not paying you, they're just sending gear out like crazy. They're really aggressive on it. So, I mean, that's how I would look at that stuff. But I would say, even though I feel like in my case, the brands I've talked about the most are not my biggest sponsors by far, I think I still tell you, even though saying that, you should assume it. That's what you should assume, because I think it's safe. Okay. Let's do this. Let me go back. All right, let's grab some. Okay, so here's a great question, and it happened to me. So it was kind of cool. So the question was, as I lost it already, hold on. Oh, okay. So a viewer sent and said, did you see retailers undercutting used sellers on Reverb? Now, here's what's interesting. This is how they titled their question to me on the email. And then the email, when I opened it up, basically explained that they're seeing, again, stores really, really dropping prices on products. And then this happened this week. I shared it with my patrons. I'm going to share with you. So I was on Reverb this week, and I'm just curious because I want to know if anyone's has this happened to you? I'm interested to see, because it's an interesting thing. I was on Reverb this week. I was looking at a used, because I'm an idiot, Fender Bassman 59. Okay, I was like, oh, you know what I need? A 410 50-watt amp that's just louder than hell, and I can't attenuate. So I'm looking at a used one. And I, when I say looking, I didn't hit, you know, follow or favorites or anything. I was just looking at it. Within minutes, I got an offer, but not from that seller. I got an offer from a retailer, and the amp sells for $2,099, and they sent me an offer that I can get it for $1,385. That's like 35% off, basically, 34% off. And I was like, wow, that's an aggressive discount. In fact, I then, of course, got curious and started looking at used ones, and to be honest, used ones weren't much cheaper. Maybe $100. Maybe $150 cheaper on average. If I was lucky, maybe I could find one $200-$300 cheaper, maybe, than their offer. But it was very rare if they weren't beat up and stuff. So I was like, wow. So sometimes, like I said, I just want to point this out. Sometimes you guys send me a subject or question, and I don't see anything. I don't think anything of it until, like I said, that happened. And I go, wow, that's interesting that I read that a couple days ago from this person. And then now it's happened to me on Reverb. And basically, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing that basically used gear still, although has come down a lot, man, the new prices are just lower a lot of cases, or the same price. So interesting. I'm more curious to see if you guys are noticing that sellers on Reverb are sending you offers, even though you weren't looking at that seller or that, I don't want to say that product, but that maybe a new product, like I said. So it's definitely something that Reverb, they're electing to do through Reverb. So there must be a way that says, hey, if a customer is out there looking at a used American Strat, I want to be able to send them an offer on what new American Strat I have, and they send it. So that was really, really cool. Let me know if you guys are seeing that same thing. It seemed like a fluke, but I feel like it happened one or two other times. But when it happened in the past, I couldn't remember because I kind of felt like I was looking at a seller on a new product and another seller sent me an offer, and I wasn't sure that that was the same seller. In this particular case, I can tell you for a fact, I've only looked at one used Bassman 59 and it was used. So I thought it was strange that a new seller knew to send me an offer, knew that I was looking. So it's kind of like Big Brother watching, but for gear. Unfreaking Believable says he's seen that this week. Yeah, it's interesting. Now, so you know, I'm not upset about it because, like, that's a crazy deal. Trust me, I've been staring at that deal for the last 24 hours going, oh, maybe I need a Bassman. Trolls something says, why doesn't anyone offer me 35% off? That's a pretty crazy discount. I haven't seen that. If you saw on my, let me see, where's it at? If you saw on that page I was showing you, I was looking at other stuff. This stuff I was actually looking at. Of course, I was looking at Mesa Boogies because I'm, you know. And they sent me offers, and those offers were like 10 and 15%. They were more in line to what I saw. And again, it's like I just looked at the product. I didn't, you know, I looked at their product, but I looked at a product on their actual page on Reverb, and they were sent offers 10, 15% off. At this point, I'm not seeing any new product that I can, or used at that most, but mostly new product. I don't see any that I look at and somebody's not sending me an offer right away. So I just, there you go. So hold on a second. Okay, how are we doing? We're doing good. I'm waiting for a certain time to show you guys something cool. All right. Grubby Mike Guitar says, I click the watch button for something on Reverb, and then I get offers from other sellers for a much higher price than yeah, that doesn't sound good. That sounds horrible. And this ties into the next thing. I feel like this is a lot of price stuff going on, but I think right now the market is in flux and everything's going crazy, and this is kind of some hot subjects that people are curious about or talking about because I'm seeing a lot of it. This came in from Luis Martinez, who said, Phil, did you see Fender raise the prices of the USA stuff? Well, interesting, funny about that comment is, yes, I saw that Fender raised prices on USA stuff, and I still see dealers giving you smoking deals on Fender stuff, especially Fender USA, Fender Made in Mexico stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting to see as, you know, like we talked about before, you know, the manufacturers are maybe raising prices still, but the dealers are discounting to get rid of inventory. Now, the thing about that, and this is my experience in the past, is that means that at some point the dealers will thin the inventories and then those prices will firm. That's just how that's going to work. So, you know, the deals are because of the inventory right now. Once they are lower on the inventory, everybody's going to, you know, pull back the deals. I'm not saying run and hurry and buy, but I'm just saying you need to be aware of the fact that somebody's going to say something, and they always do. Oh man, if you think it's cheap now, it'd be even cheaper. No, that's not how it works. Trust me, like zombies can come and everything can go to crap. And if that's what you're banking on, that's always a factor of life. But we're just talking about guitar market and inventories. And as inventories are full, the prices will come down. But as the inventory thins, the prices will go up or firm up. And it's happened every time in the past too. How long that takes or when, I don't know. This came from Tito, who says, hey, oh wow, by the way, thanks for the massive super chat, Tito. I like your vodka, by the way. Says, my birthday weekend. Happy birthday. He says, so pretty sure it must be the good Mrs. McKnight's as well. I believe it's technically, is it technically this weekend? Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's more this weekend than next weekend. Yep, that's true. Says, please enjoy your favorite bottle of wine. Happy birthday. You know, I got her for her birthday. I took her to Costco and I got her something. I'm not bragging, you know, but it is true. I got her. She wanted something at Costco. So I went to Costco and we got it. You know, we're so past buying each other stuff. It's impossible. For her birthday, I tried to buy her Legos. She likes giraffes and Legos, and they make giraffe Legos, and I bought one. And within, I'm not saying minutes. That would be funny, right? Seconds. Like, I'm like, hee-hee, boop. And then she, like 10 seconds later, she looks over and she goes, did you just buy Legos? And I'm like, oh, stupid bank notifications. So she knew Legos were coming. So at this point, it's just our birthdays are like, we just tell each other what we're going to get. The other one goes, okay, I'll go with you. That's like the big deal now, to go with you, to go get it. Like, that's how you feel like you're part of the deal. Like, you know, I'll go with you to Costco, not for the $1.50 hot dog and Coke, but for, you know, to be with your birthday. Okay. Antique Rocker says, I just saw Tyler Bryant playing his resonator guitar. Unfreaking believable. What is your opinion of resonators? And do you prefer a cone style? I owned two resonator guitars. I went through that phase. I had a metal one, and then I had a wood one, obviously with the metal, I guess you call it the can. I have no idea. I always said this before. Resonator guitars are not something I came across very often in the guitar tech world, because a lot of people don't need them set up. Usually, the crappier they play, the higher, you know, the high action is a big deal. So it's not like it's like somebody's like, oh no, I need this really intonated really well, and I need this, you know, action lowered. It's not something you see. But I did buy a couple over the years to kind of do something with them, and I just, slide is just not my thing. I've done a couple videos on slide stuff, and you know, I really could, you know, kind of made my videos more about the average person trying to do some slide work. I just can't do slide. You know, RJ and those guys, RJ Rinkilio, people who can do really amazing slide work, to me, it's a different animal. It's almost like it becomes a different instrument to me, slide guitar. So, but yes. So there you go. Cool. Clan Housecast says, the JP6 Next was way smaller in width and thickness over the Majesty. The slight difference might be making my hand a bit sore. You were like right last week. Yeah, like I said, I mean, you know, hey, look, we talked about this. I love Music Man quality, but the necks are a little small for me. And, you know, this happened with the original Axis, you know, the Eddie Van Halen Music Mans. The necks were so tiny. And I would play the PV and everybody goes, oh, the Music Mans are so much better than the PV. But to me, the PV, the neck was a little chunkier and it just kind of felt like I could kind of hold on to it. And then I thought the EVH model was somewhere in between those necks, which was really nice to my hands. But yeah, I do. When the neck's small, it's tough. So it's so yeah, I hope it all works out. But yeah, I know it sucks if it doesn't fit. It makes your hand hurt. Let's do Grumpy Mike Guitar says, I love the new channel format, but will we ever see a return of a Sharpman Axe? Inquiring minds want to know. You know, the Sharpman Axe was a, it depends. We're going to keep this super brief because this comes up randomly on shows over the years. It's a different perspective. Okay. So Sharpman Axe for me was a horrible failure. Sharpman Axe for the viewers was good. I know because I get it all the time. So what people have memories of things that aren't necessarily true. So here's what I mean by that. Sharpman Axe, like deep dives, took forever. So Sharpman Axe would take about 3 to 4 days to film, do, and you know, and then plus or the organization of the parts and stuff. Where a deep dive takes me about 2 days and then maybe a day to 2 days of research. So the deep dive series is a little faster for me than Sharpman Axe. However, the main thing about Sharpman Axe is if you look at the last 4 or 5 I did, because I did about 15, they didn't perform very well. So Sharpen My Axe really quickly, I learned that they only do well if the guitar is very clickbaitable and, you know, like Squires and Epiphones. So then, you know, then you're like drawn to that. But more importantly, it was costing a fortune and no one would sponsor them. And then other YouTube channels got really savvy. I've talked about this too. They got really savvy and they started doing their own version of Sharpman Axe. And I was even shocked because a lot of them were like, I'm like, oh, I didn't know they worked on guitars. And their video would be like, I got this guy to fix my guitar. And I'm like, oh, well, that's right. They can just hire a tech to do it. And they gave you the before and afters. And the difference though is, and this, I've said this before, if the logic of the video was I buy a guitar and then I get companies to send me thousands of dollars are of free product and I fix up my personal guitar on a video and I go and then I do the video and the video makes a few hundred dollars, that's a pretty awesome gig, man. I'm like, wow, I got a guitar all decked out for free and I got paid a few hundred dollars for my time. This is really great. What was happening with me was I was paying out of pocket hundreds of dollars for the gear, for the products. Then I was doing hours, tens of hours of work. And then I was giving the guitar back to the viewer and the net result was, it was insane. It was like the video made $300 and I literally paid $800 to make the video, not including my time, which, you know, if I would have charged, we talked about this one time on Sharpman Axe, if I would have charged the labor, which I was putting at the end of the video, you know, I would have got paid $700 and instead I lost $800 making the video. So that was the pushback on that. And so what happened was, and people like it or don't like it, it's fine. The compromise of that was, well, how do I not, you know, I didn't want to not do it, but I also didn't want to do it. And that's where Deep Dive came from. It's like, well, what if instead of a viewer's guitar, which I understand is the appeal and that's why I wanted to do it, what if we just take the guitars the company sent us and go through them and dissect them? And the information's still there. It's still kind of fun. I know it's not the same, but it's functional. I've had this conversation before. I'm always open, as always. You guys, please send in emails and ideas to this idea. What ultimately I asked was, I was trying to get any companies to help sponsor, co-sponsor. Companies aren't interested in sponsoring this, just like they don't really want to sponsor the deep dives. Companies aren't interested in anything other than open the box, tell everybody it's awesome, and shut up and go and turn the video off. You know, that's what they want. They want a reaction to the product. Like, wow, I can't believe it's blue. And then it's like, then that's the end of the video. That's what companies really seem to be focused on for paying and sponsoring, right? They don't really want you to tell people why their guitar might not be great or why you should fix it. I won't, like I said, out of a courtesy, one of the deep dives I did, which was sponsored after the, or not deep dives, I'm sorry, the Sherman X, which when I say sponsored, they paid money to charity. We did a charity one. At the end of it, the representative from the company said, I can't believe we just paid you to tell everybody why, you know, how to make our guitar better. He's like, you know, his boss was like, this is a horrible idea. Why did you okay this? He basically got our guitar and then goes, here's how we'll make it better. And they're like, this is a horrible idea for a business, for a, you know, for a business to fund. So that's what kind of happened with that. And then on the side note, and then I'm done. Like I said, I already went too long. Everyone that emails me always has a great idea for me, which is, hey, Phil, I have 11 guitars and I'd like you to send them all to you and you can sharpen my axe and fix them all up. And I'm like, yeah, I get why you would want me to put thousands of dollars in your guitars and then basically put hundreds of dollars worth of labor into them and send them back to you. I get that you're willing to volunteer. Thank you so much. Everybody was so willing to volunteer for that. And I was like, okay, so the companies don't want to help me pay for this. The viewers are definitely willing to volunteer to get all the free stuff they can get. And in the middle, somewhere in the middle, I was like, okay, this isn't working for me. So that's why that morphed into the deep dive series. Will it come back? We don't know. I don't know. We'll see. Those are all the problems. Of course, please feel free to reach out and tell me how you have ideas on how to make it better or fix it or whatever. Because it happens all the time. Sometimes you guys come at me with something and I go, man, that's awesome. I never thought about doing it that way. So there you go. All right. But never say never, Grumpy Mike. Trust me, we liked it. I like the idea of it, the core of it. You know, and to be honest with you, the channel's grown so much that not much more growth, and we probably could just fund it all ourselves and do it ourselves. Channels kind of go in a weird arc, and this channel is close to that next level where, you know, you just start doing, like, not like Mr. Beast, but kind of like that, where I just start doing whatever I want. I don't need anybody's help because the channel's generating enough revenue to where you can just, like, I can do that, you know. If you, like I said, if I have no, I'm too dumb. If I'm totally okay with spending $800 to make $1,000 for a week's work. I'm that dumb. Okay. All right. Cars in Depth. That's a cool channel. Name says, about USA pricing, the Stratocaster $249.50 in 1950 is $2,860 in 2024 dollars, a brand new American Strat is about $18 at Sweetwater. Okay, so this is an argument I've heard before. You know, and that's not just Fender, Gretsch, Gibson. There's a lot of people who say, if you take what they were in the 50s, they've definitely come down in price. Well, I mean, come on, think about this. At the argument of that, let me give you this Cars in Depth. A Stratocaster, a 1954 Stratocaster 1954 was $249.50. I could argue that a Squire that is currently $249 is really close to that guitar in the way it's built. Somebody is going to freak out in the comments as they always do. What? The frets aren't the same. The pickups aren't the same. Yeah, you know what though? You give me, I'm not even a great player. You give me a 1954 Strat and you give me a $249 Squire and stick me on stage and I promise you, no one will say anything. Either way, no one will say, man, that Squire you did for song two sounds crappy and no one's going to say, that 54 Strat, I could hear the singing angels coming from the pickups as it screamed out of your fingers. No one's going to care. So the reality is guitars not only have not gone, like I said, you can $249 now you can buy a decent Fender or a Squire. So a lot of people are going to say, like, wow, the prices aren't really as bad as, you know, they're not that bad. But there's a lot of things to compare, right? This is the argument, and this is why I'm saying, so Cars in Depth, I love this subject question, by the way. I love this conversation. This is a conversation that I like because this is how I kind of point this out. There was a, when people talk about like their phones, right? The cell phones, and they go $1,000 for a cell phone, and then you know $100 and something a month for the cell phones. I don't know what cell phones cost a month. Okay, this is probably where I should admit this to you guys. I have no idea what cell phone for service costs for a month. I pay for a bunch of people's cell phone service because I'm a small business, so I have no idea what the bill is. I'd have to ask my wife what the accounting of that is, but I assume it's hundreds of dollars a month. Okay, so anyways, my point is that if you talk about what a cell phone costs now versus what a phone line from AT&T to your house with one phone that you could buy at Radio Shack for $69, you could say, man, it was so much cheaper back then. But I could also argue, yeah, well, a GPS, a Grumman GPS unit was expensive back then, and it wasn't as accurate as your phone. And I remember using a payphone all the time, right? And also, I remember buying maps everywhere I went. I had to stop at a gas station and buy the maps, you know, where I was going. And I remember movie phone. Do you guys remember movie phone? I used to have to call the movie, right? Call the movie theater and get the times and stuff. So the phone is more so, you know, more than what a phone is. My point in this whole rhetoric is that this is where it is complex to argue pricing versus what it was then versus now, because the reality is everything's gotten so cheap now, but also so comparably expensive too. Does that make sense? And I think when I see most guitar players talking about prices, they don't want to focus on, and I understand that, what American Strat cost in 54 versus what it costs now. They want to compare what American Strat costs now versus their affordable alternative now, because that's what's really what's happened, is there's a great affordable alternative. I guess that's my point I'm trying to make. Actually, I'm not making a point. I'm just discussing the subject. I think that's really the point. Really cool. But in all fairness, the other thing you want to think about is this, Cars in Depth, because Fender created this world that we're talking about. So if you don't mind, I want to look at this just because I'm curious. Okay, so I want to point out that that's a relic. That's not very fair. So I just want to see what a 1950s reissue Strat is. So 1950s reissue Fender Strat, not a custom shop. Although that would be accurate too, because it's made on the same machines. Okay, I think that's fair. So let's share this. So I think a better comparison, I think a good comparison would compare the 1954 Strat to a 1950s era Strat pricing. And it looks like that's about $229. So I think that would be more comparable in pricing. I know that sounds silly because, you know, at the time there wasn't like a vintage Strat in the 50s. I don't know why. I'm just thinking that's more apples to apples comparison, because that's how they were able to drive up the prices on vintage gears vintage reissue gears, by saying it's just like it was in the 50s. So even Fender's like, the new one's not the same. I don't know. This is one of those things, a reason I like talking about this sometimes, you guys know, on this, when I'm watching the rebroadcast, when I'm timestamping, I like reading what you guys have to say. It usually gets you guys all going in 10 different directions, and I like hearing it. Okay, so the Step Van Joe. God, I'm like, I see Steven and I'm like, Step Van Joe says, what's your take on the Sam Ash's closing? We talked briefly about the Hollywood Sam Ash closing last week. Now we know it's about 18 stores. I believe they have 37 stores or 30-ish stores. So it's about half or a little bit over half the Sam Ash's closing. I've read a bunch of stuff trying to isolate some of the problems. And one of the things that talks about some failed negotiations or failed issues with the rent, right? Okay. Interesting in point, because what I noticed is a lot of the locations that are closing are in what I would definitely call the high rent or high real estate areas. So that definitely looked, like that could be the actual way. I still think what I said last week, which was, I think this in the long term could be good. When I say good, look, people losing their jobs, it's not good. You know, stores closing, and it's not good. But If it's right, because they're, you know, I mean, this, it's a sign of the times. The best thing I think Sam Ash can do to secure its future is build a really good website. And I know, you know, I tell you all the time, everybody's going to say, you know, people say all the time, unbiased. Everybody's got a bias. I have a bias. And one of the things I think sometimes I misread on the bias is that because I have a YouTube channel, because I'm social media, because I'm on the internet, I think the internet is always good. Everything internet is good. I want you to think of me, in this regards, please think of me more like a weatherman. I'm giving you the, I'm not creating the rain, okay? I'm not making it rain tomorrow, okay? I'm telling you it's raining tomorrow. I'm not telling, I can't make it sunny. I can't make it cold or hot. I just can tell you if it's cold or hot. I don't, I'm not saying I want stores closing and I want the internet to succeed. That's the farthest thing from what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's raining tomorrow. What I'm saying is that there is inevitability is stores closing. The largest U.S. retailer of musical instruments right now is Sweetwater. They have one store. So don't, please don't put in the comments they have two locations. They do have a second location in Arizona, but you can't go to that. That's not the store. It's just a warehouse. 250,000 square foot warehouse, but it's still a warehouse. My point is that the largest retailer now, which was Guitar Center, but now is Sweetwater, is online only. I mean, and the largest, you know, and look at Amazon and look at the growth. You know, it's kind of like, look, I'm not saying I want that. I'm not saying, because I don't want it to be construed with that. I'm not saying, man, Sweetwater's way. I'm saying, like, the people have spoken with their wallets, and this is where we are, okay? And the reality is, Sam Ash, I love them as a company. I've always liked them. I like mom and pops. I like, obviously, I was a mom and pop for 13 years. I cannot help but be sympathetic. Hell, I spend more phone time every year on the phone with mom and pop businesses for free, because trust me, I don't give my time for free to the bigger companies. But on the phone, I for free, anything I can do, because I was there in the trenches doing it and I loved it. I just happened to get this YouTube gig, and it like I said, it gave, you know, there's a very detailed interview with me on the Tone Mob's website podcast, and if you want to check it out. But anyways, the point is, I talk about, you know, how it gave me more time to spend with my kids and stuff. But the point of this is that, in my opinion, Sam Ash doesn't build a better website, they go out of business, period. That's the result. I mean, even somebody, and if you're going to say it, just fine. If you're going to say, well, Sam Ash, I go to my local Sam Ashville, and they really do a lot of band orchestra rentals, and that's a big part of the business. Yeah, and that's coming hard online. I haven't had a store in 7 years. In those 13 years, I've told you guys, I was a guitar store only. We never sold PA. We never sold drums. We sold guitar stores. We were one of the, we were a rental depot for the largest renter of musical instruments physical in Arizona, which is Milano's Music, even though their competitor, which is basically Guitar Center, gave us a better deal to rent instruments. We did Milano's because we supported the business in our city, in our town, in our state. We supported local. We were local. We supported local. My point, though, is that that online, that was online, music and arts, right? Or arts and music. I think it's music and arts, which is owned by Guitar Center. They would come to you and say, hey, look, what does Milano's pay you? We'll pay you more. We can deliver the instruments. We can do everything on via online. You just go on our website, tell us what instruments you need. They'll show up. The customers rent them. And then we get a percentage. I think we got 20%, so you guys know. So if we could rent, I can imagine, if you could rent 10,000 instruments, you'd make $2,000 a month. And that's residual. It just comes every month after month. So my point is that with Sam Ash, although I hate hearing the stores closing, I'm hopeful this is not just, you know, stores are closing, real estate's horrible, the market, all the things we know. I mean, we talked about the stores being really thin and empty. I want to say, I hope this is also a strategy change, because I think the strategy is to get online. Because look, I'm going to stick where I've always stuck. I have no idea what I'm saying anymore. I'm going to stay where I believe, which is this. Sweetwater gives me a fraction of what Guitar Center gives me to give you affiliate links, okay? I've said this many times. Guitar Center, I'm an affiliate for Guitar Center. They pay me 2.5 times what Sweetwater does. I constantly send you to Sweetwater. I don't have a problem, Guitar Center. Hell, it's the bottom line. My bottom line is it's better if you go to Guitar Center. For me, if you buy through my affiliates through Guitar Center. But I prefer Sweetwater. I buy from Sweetwater over Guitar Center. Nothing wrong with Guitar Center. I just did a podcast a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago where I said I had a great experience at Guitar Center. My point, though, is that I would love to send you just to Sam Ash's website, but it's horrible. I told you this to Sam Ash many times. I can't send viewers to this, to your website. I don't buy from you because it's not functioning for me the way I want it to. And if you can improve that, I would send you the customers, even if at detriment to me financially, because I would rather do the thing that makes me feel better than gives me money. But more importantly, I can't send customers to be aggravated. I can't send my viewers to be aggravated. So that's my cents and dollars on cents on that. We'll see what happens. I did get a lot of emails, questions, texts from everybody in the industry going, well, you know, what do you think of the Sam Ash's closing? And I told them the same thing I told you guys. I'm hoping it's an opportunity. And I think it's smart, you know, but I don't know all the details. So we don't know why they're doing it. And I'm sure some of you guys probably know because you probably read whatever's being leaked online, but I'm just giving you what I know. So... I'm not old, I'm vintage, says Sweetwater is the most expensive candy you ever buy. Well, it is for me because I don't get the candy. I opt out for candy. I don't get it. So. I'm going to mess up this name. Delilah? I'm sorry. Delia? Whatever I'm doing to butcher your name, I apologize up front. Is it a good or bad that Sam Ash sells through their Reverb store? Well, I think given their website, the way it sits, it's a good idea. Look, Sweetwater sells. I sell this all the time. You know, Gear Nuts is Sweetwater's Reverb store. I'm sure even Amazon has a Reverb store, right? Sweetwater also has an Amazon store. And they sell on Amazon. It just makes sense. You know, so yeah, I think they should, but I think they should improve their website. I think companies right now shouldn't be investing in websites. It's a smart move, regardless of what you think of it, right? You know, when I say that regardless of what you think of it, it's like I said, it's going to rain tomorrow. Regardless of what you think of it, get an umbrella, right? If you don't like it or you like it, get the umbrella. That's what I'm basically saying. Whether they like it or not, I would get the umbrella. All right, I think I want to hit something positive now. So something I want to add to the show, a little fun, right? Because sometimes the show is about the industry and it's interesting, maybe. I don't know, but it's not just fun. I want to add something fun. One thing I noticed, especially when doing the clips on adding it to the second channel, was a lot of people put in a lot of comments in the videos, like, what's that guitar over your left shoulder? What's that guitar behind you on your right shoulder? What's that guitar over your left? They always want to know what the guitar is. And I thought, oh, okay, so we're going to do a little game, or a little fun game. And here's what it is. It's the guitar of the week. So every week, I'm going to take 5 minutes, and we're going to do that right now, and I'm going to share a guitar with you. This guitar I'm going to share with you is the guitar that I noticed the people asked about the most in those clips. So I made up a little thing so I can get it. We'll do it, and let's start that. Okay, here we go. All right, guys, I'm picking out the guitar for the guitar of the week. While you're waiting, please hit the like and subscribe button to help this channel. I appreciate that and helping the podcast grow. And what guitar am I picking? Well, let's see. Here it is. Okay, so the guitar of the week is now missing from behind me. Does anyone know what it was? Well, consider it was like behind me the entire time. Okay, so guitar of the week this week was... Everybody kept asking me what this guitar is. They said, hey, there is a single cut hollow body PRS behind you. What is that? You know, some people said, oh, it has 2 F-holes, but it's a semi-hollow. What is that? And here's what it is. It is a hollow body to Paul Reed Smith, USA made guitar. So this means it's 100% hollow. It does have a wooden block underneath the bridge that connects the two pieces. This is a 10 top. So I'll share that with you right here. And then it has a 10 top back. One of the things that really sucks about hollow body PRSs is because they do a maple cap on both sides. So this is two full maple caps, and then of course it's hollow in the center. If you get a 10 top, which is like a crazy upcharge, they double the price of that because they got to do two 10 tops on the guitar. This guitar I bought used, I believe this guitar is a 2011. Is what I think I'm seeing here. The Sharpie's a little faded. They write them on with a Sharpie. Could be the 2012. And it's a Snark tuner. Yeah, there's a Snark tuner on it. This guitar I bought used at the tail end of the guitar boom. Somebody listed it for what I thought was a ridiculously low price. I had already bought a hollow body 2. You can see the blue one behind me. This is a hollow body 2. I bought that one new during COVID. And when I saw this one, I was obviously... I was like, man, the market has really changed because this guitar I thought should have gone for double during that, obviously, the boom market. So when I saw the price, I was like, wow, this is crazy good. So let me tell you a little bit more about it. And look at this. I have different camera angles now. Guitar view. Look at that. Okay, so what we have is two 5708 pickups. This does have a transducer pickup in the bridge right here. And that is the switch right here and the volume. And then, of course, you got a volume, a tone, and three-way switch. And this has binding, which is also very unique. You can see the binding on the neck. And then this has the hollow birds. So the outlines are ivory, plastic, but ivory. And then the inside looks like, I don't know, like bronze or something. And that's it. It still has the original strings on it because I wouldn't have restrung it that way. These little cactus needles sticking out right there. And I want to share it with you. So what I did is I plugged it into this Bad Cat Jet Black right here. And I'm going to go ahead and play the clean channel for you with the neck pickup so you guys can hear it. Here we go. Oh, I should say, here we go. Okay, and then now I'm going to switch it to the piezo, which, of course, it's not going to sound super great because, obviously, it's through a guitar amp, not an acoustic amp. And then last, I want to show you guys the overdrive. We'll go to the neck pickup. Actually, go to that bridge. All right, so there you go. So that is your Hollow Body 2 Guitar of the Week. The reason I wanted to do this is because I just saw so many of those questions. I normally don't get to see all the comments on the videos, but when I was doing the pod clips, obviously I was very in tune with new videos going out, new stuff, and I was reading just the... I had no idea so many of you were asking me what these guitars were behind me, and I thought this was kind of fun. So we're going to do this every week. It's like 2-3 minutes to 5 minutes tops. Obviously, I have a rig set up, so I'll play for you guys just for a second to get an idea. And what else? Oh, and sometimes it'll be the guitar behind me. It'll be the guitars you guys in the comments, and if companies send a guitar, maybe we'll talk about that. So there you go. That's the guitar of the week. I hope that was fun. Let's pivot over to Amanda's been grabbing questions as she does, which I appreciate her doing that. And I'm going to go ahead and hit a few of those. Okay. And in the meantime, let's do this. We have Brian Carpenter who says, "Hey, I was able to try the new Paul Reed Smith SE CE24 Satin at my local guitar center. Could its quality price force Epi Squire to stop corner cutting and skimping on materials?" No. No. I don't see that. I don't see, I think, you know, I don't see a lot in this industry where companies feel that, you know, like PRS makes a better guitar for the price. Let's improve the quality. They only seem to react to low sales. So, I mean, if PRS outsells them, in other words, if they notice a decline in sales, maybe they might react to that. But I don't think they pick up guitars and go, oh, this is better than what we're putting out. Let's go ahead and make something better. I don't think they think of it that way. Seth says, happy Friday. What piece of gear are you most excited about right now? Huh. I don't know. Probably my Bad Cat Jet Black, which is weird. Because I've had it since November. I think I'm just more excited about it because I recently did a video. And I also changed the knobs on it. So I really like the new knobs. But that I just use it a lot. And I'm excited about it. So I'm going to say that. And then after that would probably be the Emerald Acoustic, which will be soon, but that guitar is just amazing. Amps for Buddha, thank you for the super chat. Cyber says, hey Phil, I got a Gibson Maestro Vibrola on clearance at Guitar Center for $14.99 the other day. I've noticed the bridge moves with the tremolo. Should I upgrade to the Tone Pro's nylon saddle bridge? I mean, I understand. So what he's talking about, let me kind of give you guys a visual. What he's talking about is he's using the tremolo and the bridge is tilting with when the strings go forward because he's loosening the tension. The bridge is tilting forward. His idea is if he goes with Tone Pros with nylon saddles, essentially because they're going to be, you know, decrease the friction, the strings won't push the bridge. They'll glide over it. I would say if that bugs you, you know, handle it, do it, I guess. But here's what I would say. If it's not effectively hurting the way the guitar performs and plays, in other words, is returning to pitch and playing great, I'd leave it alone. Unless, of course, you're having an OCD moment, which we all have to some degree, and it's bothering you. Well, if it's bothering you mentally, it's stripping you of joy, you know, I'm not here to judge you for that. We all got silly things to worry about. Then do it. But if it's not, if it's like more of a just, you know, you just don't know if it's a problem or not. It's only a problem if it's actually creating the guitar to go out of tune. So as long as it's staying in tune, just leave it alone. Fret Level Midnight says, thoughts on JHS doing the fire sale on their DOD 250 AK, the preamp overdrive price drop from $179 to $69. If you guys didn't see that, it's too late now. they put it on Instagram. They're like, hey, this was $179. And it's a blowout for $69, and they sold out, of course, because, you know, everybody's, we all have a sickness, right? When your drug dealer calls you and says, hey, heroin half off, I guess you go, well, okay. So I guess, what's your question? I saw the fire sale. What do I think of it? What are my thoughts? That is the market. Like I said, too much inventory has to go. You know, there's a saying, it's cash poor, inventory rich. It means you got crap to sell, no money, and you want to sell. I'm not saying that they're broke. I'm just saying, you know, inventory is not a good thing. You want it going out the door. So they just made them go out the door. It makes sense. Could it be that they, you know, it's like everything. They, you know, if they could predict everything, they would obviously have life very easy, like everybody else would if they could. So they were like, you know, they probably made too many of those and bought too many boxes to make those, and they got to go, and they didn't sell. So I'm seeing fire sales constantly all the time on all kinds of products, and that will continue to go until the inventories kind of, like I said, till they right size their inventories. Is that what people like to say? Isn't that what they say in corporations? Are like, hey, we're right sizing our employees, which means somebody's getting canned. They're right sizing inventory, and which means they're getting rid of stuff until it's works. Okay. All right. We're at the, let me do this last thing. Let me refresh this. Okay. The last super chat is, I'm looking for a tuner for a guitar workstation and a large screen, something like the Korg Pitch Blacks X Pro, but with a mic for acoustic thoughts. This is the one I recommend. This is the one I use in all the videos that you see. And I'm going to show it to you right now. Go back. It's this guy right here. This is what I recommend to you. Let me share it with you. Bam. It's the Peterson Strobe Plus HDC HDC Chromatic Handheld Strobe Tuner. There are so many reasons why I like this thing. Does it show you a picture of the black? Oh, look, the back. 360. I want to show you what I love about it. So not only do I love that it has this cool little stand right there, like you're saying, of course, it's got a microphone that works really good. It's right there. It's got, or maybe it's right there. I don't know. The microphone's somewhere. Anyways, it's got the microphone. It's got a plug-in. And more importantly, let's go to this side. It's got this little thing right here that I love. If you don't know what that is the same size as like cameras and stuff. So I have mine on a special clamp that you can buy on Amazon. Let me do this. Let me go to Amazon. I will show you the thing. Okay, hold on a second. I just need to find it. Here it is. Okay, hold on. Where is it at? Here it is. Why can't I find this thing? Okay, here it is. This is this clamp right here. This thing is $16.95. And let me click a picture. Here we go. Can I? Oh, I want this picture. That's what I'm trying to show you. See how you can clamp this thing? See? Put it there. Mine, I can put it on this clamp. The reason I'm showing you that is because not only can you put it on your bench, which is great, but I have a little clamp for it, which you saw, and I can attach it to that, and then I can clamp it anywhere. And I have, so this is my boom mic from my podcasting rig. In my shop, I have a boom arm for a magnifying glass with a light, and on that boom arm, I have it clamped on there too. So, so you know, it's really convenient for me. It gets it out of the way. I can stand it on there. I can use it as the microphone. I can use it plugged in. It's accurate as hell. It's the best, and I love that extra feature because, like I said, I got that little clamp for $16-17, and it works great. Like I said, you can clamp it on a guitar stand. You can clamp it on a mic stand. You can clamp it on anything, and I just love it. So there you go. That's what I would suggest. All right, let's do what Amanda sent. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, Papa Steve says, "Hey Phil, my used new to me Fender Tele has a sticker on the back that says special edition. Do you know what that is?" Yeah, it means that it was a special edition. yeah, that's what it means. So sometimes Fender does limited runs constantly, special edition stuff, and sometimes it's connected to an anniversary. Sometimes it's connected to the limitation of that run. Fender is probably the most notorious for doing this. And they tend to do it a lot during the summer, and things have changed over the years. But for when I, obviously 13 years being a Fender dealer in a music store, we would see them definitely drop during the summer when sales dropped, you know, sales are slow, people are on vacation. And then Fender would be like, they would do all these Fender special runs or limited special editions or limited editions because, you know, it gets people excited. And sometimes it's easy as they mismatched some necks and bodies, you know, or changed things up or made a special color. And that's why they do it. And so the hard part of that is why usually, especially back in the day, you would have all these Fender catalogs and you would go through and you would never find them in the catalog. It's because they did the catalogs, because they were so expensive to make. That's how crazy the old times are. Fender catalogs were so expensive, they would do those at the beginning of the year, and they would sometimes do a mid-year edition and a smaller catalog, but most of the time all this stuff would never make it into the catalogs. Same thing with Fender websites now. Very rarely do they put the special edition or special Fender special run stuff in the websites at all. Usually it's sent as some kind of PDF file to the dealers saying this is what it is, and you know, dealers didn't keep the stuff and they delete the stuff, and so that's why you don't have it, that information. But that's what special edition means. It's a special run or special edition, and usually it's either attached to either an event or it could just be low sales. That'd be the event. and they're usually a great buy, and they're usually cool as hell because they worked. It worked for us every summer, man. We would sell anything that we could get that was special run or special edition. It was because people came in and they'd be like, I'm here to get strings. I'm taking my kids to Disneyland. I'm like, oh, you know, anything you need? And they're like, I wish I could buy a guitar. I just got to pay for churros at Disneyland. I'm like, I understand. And they're like, oh, did you see the Fender Special Edition Tellies with swirl paint? They're like, got to buy that. Swipe. And they're like, or, you know, actually, I left a part out. That's funny. They go, well, when I get back from vacation, I think I'll get it. And I go, oh, well, it was special edition. We only got three. Swipe. They were like, done. So that's what you got there, buddy. And then, this one's for Raf's Gear Reviews. We'll end on this one. Raf's Gear Reviews says, Phil, do you feel like CNC machinery is going to take over the industry? It took over the industry. So let's start there. To the point where the U.S. manufacturers will rely more and more heavily on them to cut on the manpower and Sage overall cost. Okay, so this ties in. This is a great way to end the show. This comment question, by the way, thank you, Amanda, for giving me this and the other ones too as well, is a double whammy, okay? So CNC machines are not the future. They are the now, right? We have to talk about whatever's coming next to be the future. Haas CNC machines, you know, all these CNC machines, they are efficient. They pay for themselves very quickly. Okay. And not only in the time of, you know, how consistent they are and how good they are, but also the people not getting hurt. And I need to give you a reference. And so I've had this tucked away, little nugget, if you will, I'm going to share with you guys, because this is the conversation that we have on this show. And, the conversation is so hard. I've talked about this. Every time I talk about cheap guitars, you guys always say slave labor. Every time I talk about expensive guitars, you tell me that that's not what the working person can afford. And I get that. When I say you, I don't mean all of you. I'm talking about this, just the loudest voice. The loudest voice is always presented in the comment section, right? And the loudest voice always says, I won't buy a cheap guitar because slave labor. And the loudest voice always says, I won't buy an expensive guitar because, you know, it's ridiculously overpriced. Okay. So I thought I'd share this with you. This is an actual real thing I'm going to share. Okay. These are real photos. They were taken the same day. Okay. And it's going to testify to the CNC machines and why manufacturers have definitely relied on CNC machines, pluck machines, and why the workforce is a problem for these companies. So let me show you this and I'll explain what you're about to see. Okay. So this picture was taken, okay, at Fender. Okay, so I'm going to show you a picture at Fender, and then I'm going to show you a picture of something that was taken by Fender at a Panda Express. Here's what you're looking at. This is, for those of you listening later on the Listen broadcast, this is a job posting at Fender at the factory for a buff and polish team lead for first shift. That is a supervisor position. They're willing to pay starting at $20.50 an hour. Keep in mind, this is Corona, California. This is essentially LA. So that is what this $1,800 guitar we're talking about earlier at Fender Guitar, the person that's going to run the team of people who are going to buff and polish the guitar, they're going to make $20.50 an hour is what they're willing to start the pay for this. This is a level up job, by the way. I want you to understand this. This is a person who's in the factory right now, and they're being told, hey, if you want to apply for a better position, you can make $20.50 an hour. This actual picture was actually taken. The next picture, which is side by side, is an actual picture same day that this was sent to me by multiple employees, by the way. These employees went to lunch. This is a poster that Panda Express posted out in front of their entrance, and it says service and kitchen team starts at $20.50 to $24.50. Shift leader and cook gets paid $22.50 to $26.50. Assistant manager, $26 to $29, and so on and so on. The point of this is not to say, oh man, Fender's paying less than Panda Express, although that obviously is accurate. and by the way, when I laugh, it's my awkward laugh. I always have to understand. It's like when I was in basic training, you know, and they were like, what are you laughing at, McFright? And you'd laugh and they'd spit in your face. I'm not laughing. This situation becomes so awkward for me emotionally. I chuckle a little bit because I'm uncomfortable with it. I'm uncomfortable with this discussion because it's not a good discussion. It's a horrible discussion. My point is, yes, CNC machines are the future. the guitar that you are saying is overpriced, a person is building it, and it's like, okay, do I want to build? This is the decision they have to make today. Do I want to buff and polish some rich asshole's really nice American Strat, or do I want to serve orange chicken? Because it pays about the same. And that is an accurate assessment, because those are real pictures. Those are recent, by the way, within the last 60 days. So that's how that is. So my point to this is, to your question, of course they're going to look at machines. The same reason fast food places are looking at iPads and machines. Labor's expensive, even when labor isn't paid anything close to what it's probably worth. So that's just the reality of this. And that's why I like these discussions, because, you know, I don't want anyone to ever think, just because they concoct it in their head, that if you buy a $400 guitar, that employee isn't making enough, isn't making a living. But if you buy a $3,000 guitar, they are. Because the truth is, in this industry, is not a high pay industry, and a lot of employees are not making a lot of money. So it's not so much that justifies buying the $300 guitar or buying the $3,000 guitar. I can't do that in my head even, so I can't tell you how to do that. But I want to have these discussions, because at the end of the day, this podcast and my channel is called Know Your Gear. It's about discussing the gear, the products, the industry. I don't know it. I just want to. And I think you do too. And that's what we're going to talk about. And that's what we're talking about this. So take that information, mull it in your head. I hope you come to some conclusion. You can tell me next week what you guys think of that kind of information, because it's pretty crazy. But yes, I would imagine the manufacturers are going to as many machines as possible, especially in California, like a lot of jobs. Okay, I think we ended on that one a little on a bummer, but hey, that guitar on the wall was cool. We can focus on that too, and we'll stop now. We'll talk next week. I hope to see you guys next week. More importantly, I hope that you guys check out the clips of whatever the show is on the second channel, and I'll put a link down below for that. I want to thank the moderators who make this amazing show, that they just kick ass. So thank you for that. Thank you so much for the patrons and the channel members, because again, that's the sponsor of this show, and literally makes it happen. On that note, I'm going to let you guys go.
The Know Your Gear Podcast. The Know Your Gear Podcast is not responsible for any spontaneous guitar purchases you make during or after the show.